Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, whoa, howdy. Well, I hope you still have speakers, because I think I just blew out my own headphones. The microphone is working well this evening. Don't worry, it won't last. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 17th day of March, 2016. I'm told that it is St. Patrick's Day. So, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Being a non-religious person, I have exercised my right to wear whatever damned color I chose today, and son of a bitch, if I didn't pick a sort of a blue-green tealy kind of thing. So I think I'm still within the faithful or the flock or flockers. Right. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Beat you to it, Tim. And this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Yes. Thomas tells me, hear you loud and clear over at FYINation.com, mattress man. Mattress. Jesus. Well, at least I'm not herbal erection remedy man. You take your victories where you can get them. So I haven't been pinched today or anything like that. Everybody's got a stream. I've already been told. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, has told me you're on, and I am. How did the calving work out, Carol? I saw that earlier today. Mm-hmm. Had to run it. Bovine breech births are a two-person operation, Carol says, and so she ran away from the Facebook and the Twitters earlier this afternoon. Yeah, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, a day that we dedicate to the attempts at intellect on the part of the right wing, yeah. And so I have a feeling we're going to have a good time with that. I carry on conversations off air with a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thank you very kindly, Labor Man in the chat room, telling me Lima Charlie here in beautiful downtown Moriarty. And good evening to Earther and Labor Man and Little Gray and moderator Sparky Dunk and Texas Betsy Sparky, having chosen to be Sparky this evening and not having folded space. Ron tells me 5x5 up on the mountain over in Greenbrier County. Another 5 hours of road running today and another 150 photos. You know, I'm surprised there's not smoke coming off of that little memory card. But there are beautiful photographs to be had in Greenbrier County, West Virginia. Thank you, Little Gray. Whiskey Tango Lambada Twist. You sure that's not mango? Right. So, Oh, good evening. I don't recall seeing Trey in the room before. Good evening, Trey. That is Trey, isn't it? T-R-E. Yeah. But welcome. There is a $50 challenge on the table this evening. Thank you very kindly to Andrew toward right after the program ended last night, who finished off on Jason's Prayer Meeting Wednesday challenge. There's a $50 challenge on the table this evening, courtesy of Dr. John, in hopes of helping us meet our $200 fundraising goal. Every dollar of the first 50 that comes in will be doubled by Dr. John. And that will mean that we'll only have $100 to raise after that to keep everything square for fundraising purposes. And yeah, it's just some months are better than others. Some months are worse, and we are absolutely crawling with bills. You know, some repairs needing made and things like that. So if you want to help out, go over to headonradionetwork.com, pick the tab called Contribute, and just fill out the form there, leave out the part about what you do and where you do it, and get to the next screen, and, you know, how's this, what, you have one at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, etc., 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 and we will hopefully get that out of the way quickly. And, you know, a reminder, we're not limited to 200, whatever, yeah. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh to get us started this evening. Lies, damn lies, and more lies. On the way to work, I was listening to, oh, hell, you know what I was listening to. They were doing the usual, i.e. interviewing a Republican. Today it was Orrin Hatch. The discussion was about President Notcher's nomination to the Supreme Court. The thing that buttered my biscuit was Orrin said that if the shoe was on the other foot, that Democrats would be doing the same thing that Republicans are doing by blocking the nomination. Why is it that Republicans can lie with impunity? The interviewer didn't call bullshit on this obvious lie. Wasn't the last president that did a Supreme Court nomination in their last year in office St. Ronnie? I don't remember the Democratic Party saying they wouldn't consider his nomination, and wasn't Orrin Hatch in the Senate at the time? I get so angry when bald-faced lies are not pointed out. Well, but see, Ron, you can't just look at them and go, oh, now you're just lying. Because, see, then they won't return your phone calls anymore. And you won't be a great big for-profit media outlet with access to the movers and the shakers, right? See how it works? Yeah. I mean, that's like expecting Joke Toad to just look at T-Rump and say, you know, you're just nuts. I mean, once upon a time, we had journalists who would do that kind of thing. Edward R. Murrow comes to mind. But no, not anymore. Oh, wow, okay. All's well out on the farm, Carol tells me. The bovine in question is a 78-pound bouncing baby girl cow. Yes, girl and cow probably being redundant within the bovine world, but yay, that's nice. And you know, little baby calves are so cute. Yeah. But no, I mean, I get what Ron's talking about here. And, well, here's the other problem. And it's one of those unforced errors. It's one of those self-inflicted wounds. You may, in the course of listening to, watching, whatever, the for-profit media, you may run across somebody talking about the Biden rule. In fact, I think Carol Baker took a run at this the other day on her Facebook page. Now, what is the Biden rule? Ah, heifer, technically heifer. Got it. Thank you. I'm not really up on my cow terminology, but thank you. A few years back, when he was still in the Senate, Joe Biden said something like, well, you know, if it was the last year of a presidential term, And he wasn't, it wasn't relevant. I mean, why were you even talking about this, Vice President Biden? There were no Supreme Court nominees on the table. There were no vacancies. And I didn't know that the Senate just sits around and takes up bullshit topics for the hell of it. Yeah. But at some point in time, and Carol, if I'm getting any of this wrong, help me. Joe Biden said, well, you know, if it's the last year of a presidential term, maybe the president shouldn't nominate a, why did I say anoint? God damn it. Raphael's rubbing off on me. Oh, that's gross too. Stop that. But yeah, maybe the president shouldn't nominate a nominee for the, and so now that's the entire, never mind the Constitution, the Biden rule is in play. Yeah. And they'll actually, so that's why, I guess. I don't know. Oh, a little update coming from Jules. She tells me that when Tom refers to me as mattress man, I'm free. She says, you can always use the comeback with Tom that he's a drunken lesbian. We have some great folks that bring such joy to our FYI crew. Hugs and giggles, Jules. Yeah, okay. Goody. Yeah, the Biden rule. It's a rule now. Who knew? People just sort of sitting around spitting tobacco juice on the split rail fence there in the Senate, and suddenly it's a rule. Who knew? Courtesy of Carol Baker. In June of 1992, then Senator Joe Biden made a speech on the floor of the Senate stating that during an election year, the Senate should consider not confirming a SCOTUS nominee. Please note, this was a hypothetical. There were no vacancies on the court. So somehow, Senate Republicans, when it became politically convenient for them, decided that when the time came, they'd call this a rule. Somehow, the offhanded comments of a senator speaking in hypotheticals became some sort of rule because they hate President Obama. If Senate Republicans do this thing, they should be punished. We have to take back the Senate, and we have to elect a Democrat to the White House. Orrin Hatch and John McCain and Jim Inhofe all voted for Merrick Garland to put him on the D.C. Circuit Court. For the turtle to take to the Senate floor this morning, yesterday morning, I guess, and accuse the president of playing politics is laughable. He stated the president could name a nominee but shouldn't. Untrue. The president has a duty to name a nominee. We've discussed that. It is actually a constitutional duty that is part and parcel of the oath that he took, and for him not to do so would be a violation of that oath and would, in fact, be, if the House were so inclined, and you know what House we're talking about, grounds for impeachment. I mean, if a you-know-what on a you-know-what-colored dress is grounds for impeachment, so is not doing a mandatory constitutional duty. Carol notes, fuck them and their Biden rule. It's a little like Jesus, convenient to believe in when you're a politician. Right. And meanwhile, just to let you know where the right wing is, because you'll just enjoy the all out of this. I got a note today from Mathilde Thibault of CRC Public Relations of Alexandria, Virginia. Mathilde Thibault apparently is a PR flack for the Catholic Association. And Mathilde Thibault wants to know if I would like to interview some creature by the name of Ashley McGuire. Well, the obvious answer is no. Mm-hmm. But anyway, here's a statement by Ashley McGuire, senior fellow with the Catholic Association. Because, of course, they would like you to believe that they speak for every Roman Catholic, you know, in Merca.
The greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Bless America, e pluribus unum.
Post no bills. Yeah. But, of course, they don't. Basically, the Catholic Association is just a nasty little gang of liars who are using IRS tax code 501c3 to promote their weird theocratic vision of making everybody believe what they do. Nonetheless, here's what Ashley McGuire, senior fellow with the Catholic Association, and I don't know, maybe Ashley McGuire is a fellow, kind of like, you know, Ashley in Gone with the Wind. Ashley, over to 12 Oaks and the barbecue. Yes. Senator Manchin. I think this is a gender-hating woman. Gender-self-hating woman. And she is upset over in Virginia, mind you, that apparently my senator, Joe Manchin, has said that he might maybe kind of sort of could understand why a president would want to do the job of, you know, a president. But by the same token, remember, Senator Manchin is a real, real good Roman Catholic, and for years and years and years, he always went to the bean dinners and pancake breakfasts and what have you of West Virginians for life. And as they had their little fetus meetings. Of course, at none of those West Virginians for life meetings did they ever talk about little fetuses who have to breathe polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons or ultra-fine particulate matter that, you know, causes birth defects in the womb, because they're not that for life. I mean, if God decides to stick his godly little finger up a pregnant lady's hoo-hoo and cause a baby to have terrible, terrible health problems, well, that's just the sin of Eve, right? So Ashley McGuire over in Virginia, who is not a constituent of Senator Manchin, not that it would much matter. It's not like Joe's known for listening to his constituents. Said, Senator Manchin should not stand with President Obama and Planned Parenthood in supporting the new Supreme Court nominee. An initial review of President Obama's selection of Merrick Garland to replace Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court raises grave concerns at a time when religious liberty is under assault, and when the stakes in the fight for the unborn have never been higher. In other words, if this guy gets to be a Supreme Court justice, he might actually think that women have all kinds of rights to control their own lady parts, and then, you know, hustlers like Ashley McGuire will be out of a fucking job. Right. Catholics have special cause for concern at his vote to deny a rehearing to the priests for life in their lawsuit against the HHS mandate. Don't say mandate and Catholic in the same sentence, honey. Despite opposition from Garland, that case moved forward and now sits alongside the case brought by the Little Sisters of the Pure before the Supreme Court. Yeah, you remember the Little Sisters of the Poor. The people who want to limit their employees' ability to not get pregnant once in a while. Yeah, them.
Furthermore, the high praise from the CEO of Planned Parenthood raises major red flags, but is unsurprising given the president's extreme position on the issue of abortion and given that Garland himself called the author of Roe v. Wade a great gift to the country. Oh, for pity's sakes. How about that? I've never seen the speech. Maybe I just missed it. But I have never seen the speech in which Barack Obama calls for everybody, man, woman, and child in America, to run out and have an abortion. Because that would be kind of, that would constitute an extreme position on abortion, right? Now, on the other hand, I am aware that Barack Obama thinks that the right to control the workings of one's reproductive organs, especially among women, including abortion, is a constitutional right. You know why he thinks that? Because it is. It's a constitutional right. Just like the right of, you know, here in a couple of months, people in West Virginia to go down to the gun store and liquor emporium and pick up a 1.75 of old Panther piss and maybe a 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol and load up the pistol and stick it in their pocket and go out there and walk around all over creation, walking in stores and whitewater rafting outfitters and whatnot, protecting freedom every step of the way. It's a constitutional right, just like abortion. But that's an extreme position, thinking that women have constitutional rights over the workings of their own bodies. Mm-hmm. We support the Senate in its right to withhold consent on such a concerning nominee and to let the American people already casting votes in a very divisive and contentious election decide who should replace Justice Scalia and thereby shape the direction of the court for decades to come. The people of West Virginia deserve a voice in this debate and will have that opportunity when they vote in November. They had that opportunity in 2012 when they voted, for Willard Romney. We encourage Senator Manchin to side with the people of West Virginia and not President Obama, the abortion industry, and judges like Merrick Garland who have contempt for religious freedom. Would you be interested in speaking to Ashley McGuire? I gotta tell you, sometimes I'm halfway tempted. I don't allow ignorant pissant wingnuts on this program, but sometimes I'm tempted. Because it would almost be fun. It would. It would almost be fun to bring Ashley McGuire on this program and say, Ashley McGuire is senior fellow with the Catholic Association over in Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome, Ms. McGuire.
Well, thank you.
So, Ms. McGuire, you still want to force your weird religious beliefs on everybody in the country, including people who don't believe them. Get off my air. Click. Yeah, that could be a bit, couldn't it? Hanging up on wingnuts. But I'd feel guilty about it eventually, I think. Maybe. Yeah, right, Devin. Devin writes, is you is or is you ain't my constituency? Tell him, Pappy. Tell him. Yeah, right. Good question. Stockton Larry in the chat room asking, how is it that Ashley hates the religious freedom for the Judeos like Garland? Oh, that's what this is about, isn't it? Of course it is. But that's what tells you this is a hustle. And it's always been a hustle. It always will be a hustle. It's a way to get jobs for people who would be otherwise unemployable and give them jobs doing things that America doesn't even need to have done. It's wingnut welfare. God only knows what Ashley McGuire would be doing
if she or he, don't know, didn't have this wingnut welfare to fall back on. Didn't have the precious little fetus. To support his or her lifestyle. It's just, well. Yeah, meanwhile, with regard to the Biden rule, GK says, hey, Bob. Hey, GK. Ain't it funny the filthy right-wingers can remember Biden's comment, yet they can conveniently forget St. Ronnie Reagan's appointee? Funny how that works. Well, see, technically, it's not the same thing, GK. Because, see, Ronnie actually made his appointment in November of 87. Granted, the confirmation took place in, what, March or April of 1988. But see, that's not the same thing. It's not. I mean, it's just so different. Only a Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard with death rays in his eyeballs would think of doing something so Kenyan and un-American as appointing someone to fill a seat on the Supreme Court after a Supreme Court justice tragically dies at the tender young age of 79. You're right. No. Jesus. So, that's just a little something to play with as we begin the program. There is, of course, oh, my goodness gracious, so much more. Yes. And I mentioned Dr. John a couple of minutes ago, and Dr. John brought something up in the course of the conversation he and I were having via email. And that is something that's been making the rounds. It's been pretty obvious for some time now that, say, for instance, the New York Times is completely in the tank for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. Okay. Okay, I mean, newspapers endorse candidates. There's an open discussion to be had, I suppose, on whether that has any real impact. I don't find myself consulting the paper to see who I should vote for. I figure I'm a pretty intelligent person who can sort that business out for myself. And, you know, going as far back as, say, the Iraq War, you remember the Iraq War, the one that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton voted for? Yeah. The New York Times kind of flushed its reputation down the toilet by being a stenographer in the form of one Judy Miller, the Judy Miller Show, being a stenographer for Dick Cheney's office and the whole gang there at Murder Incorporated. So they're not exactly crawling with credibility. Yeah. So I had posted a story on my Facebook page earlier today, and previous to that, I had seen and many of you have seen it too. The Matt Taibbi story at Rolling Stone, how the New York Times sandbagged Bernie Sanders. And here's the fun part, as Dr. John points out. The public editor of the New York Times, having read Taibbi's article, pretty much agreed.
Public editor knocks New York Times for stealth editing Bernie Sanders story. And John says, this is weedy, but it's actually important because it's a real example of media bias, and it's clear that it came from way high up. In the initial version of the article that this whole thing is about, posted on Monday on the Times website, the author basically painted a picture of Bernie Sanders over decades in Congress using his status as an independent to build coalitions and to get tons of amendments supporting all the stuff that we expect Bernie to support. As the day wore on, though, edits began appearing. And you can see my the story I posted over on Facebook just by going to my page. As the day wore on, edits began appearing. First was a change in headline from Bernie Sanders scored victories for years via legislative side doors to via legislative side doors, Bernie Sanders won modest victories. It's a bit of a sea change. Two paragraphs were added in the paper's own voice, i.e. not from a source, that contradicted the rest of the story by suggesting there's little in his record that would be applicable to the presidency. They weren't there before, and they don't read like the rest of the writer's prose. In other words, they got shipped in. Yeah. Now, John adds, confession time. I roll my eyes a bit at claims of media bias, not because it doesn't exist, but because of the fake and usually misplaced ire. People tend to claim bias in things that go against their own interests only. I know from experience that most examples people cite are the result of carelessness or ignorance on the media outlet's part, or an overly developed sense of outrage by the complainer. The anger at the superdelegates being included in delegate counts is a prime example. Literally, nobody cares about that except people who are tuned in enough to know what superdelegates are. The idea that a newspaper would not count a superdelegate who has announced for a certain candidate is ludicrous and contrary to reality, but people think that's bias. Anyway, this Times story is an example of bias that's real and pernicious. We're not talking about arguably meaningless numbers in a delegate count graphic. We're talking a major story by a professional who worked hard to craft a piece whose facts and tone fit the results of her reporting. That was shifted through subtle but verifiable edits to result in a story that at best contradicts itself and at worst reflects the opposite of the initial effort. Mm-hmm. In other words, the reporter on the story did a good reportorial job. And then somebody upstairs started monkeying with it. And you know what? Reporters hate that. They hate that. I mean, I'm not even a reporter, and I hate being edited. That's why every time I send something off to be published somewhere, I tell them in advance, I have ruthlessly edited this. I've checked it for spelling, for grammar, for punctuation. I haven't ended anything with a preposition. I've removed every last word that I thought needed to be removed, and everything there is exactly what I mean to say. Please don't chop on this. And I generally have pretty good luck, but then again, I'm not in the employ of the New York Times. Right. Dr. John continues, I have no idea how the New York Times operates, but I've worked at major state and national news outlets, so I think I have an idea. Somebody at the Times got a phone call and an earful from Clinton's people, and that somebody had enough pull to get an editor to rework the story. Politicians and media execs are tight, and even in tiny places like where I work now, a story involving a politician is guaranteed to get pushback from one side or the other. No other explanation fits the facts. Sanders tweeted the initial version of the story, so it wasn't his people. The reporter didn't make the changes. She said as much elsewhere. Lower-level editors and producers are almost never allowed to make substantive changes to reporting in any media outlet, let alone the Times. Yeah, no politician wants to see an article that's, the only articles a politician wants published are positive ones. Preferably ones showing the politician kissing a baby or petting a squirrel or, you know, crapping on a criminal and being tough on crime. Right? It all depends on the readership, viewership. It all depends upon the audience. As I said, Dr. John continues, it isn't surprising that the Times leadership is biased toward Clinton. That paper's political coverage is designed to comfort the comfortable, with rare exceptions. What's important about this is that it is a real example of how that bias operates. By subtly slanting tone in the news columns, that's way more real and more serious than cheap measures of alleged bias like story counts or column inches or the goddamn superdelegates. I could have worked on that for a week and never said it as well as Dr. John has. The backgrounder on this, again, is at rollingstone.com, how the New York Times sandbagged Bernie Sanders. And yeah, the public editor of the New York Times found himself kind of in agreement. Benjamin Mullen, has the story at Pointer. The New York Times should have given readers a heads up after making alterations to a story about Bernie Sanders' legislative record that substantially changed the tenor of the article public editor Margaret Sullivan wrote Thursday. Sullivan was writing in response to a pair of stories, one written by Rolling Stone's Matt Taibbi and one penned by The Washington Post's Eric Wemple, which noted the newspaper appended two paragraphs that qualified the legislative achievement Sanders was able to accomplish in the Senate. Taibbi accused the Times of sandbagging Sanders, and Wemple wondered publicly why the paper changed its mind about the Democratic candidate. In remarks to Sullivan, Times editors Matt Purdy and Michael Tackett said that the changes were about nuance and depth, made at the pace of the web, and as such don't require some kind of editor's night. Not so, Sullivan says. Margaret Sullivan wrote, "The changes to this story were so substantive that a reader who saw the piece when it first went up might come away with a very different sense of Mr. Sanders' legislative accomplishment than one who saw it hours later." The Sanders campaign shared the initial story on social media. It's hard to imagine it would have done that if the edited version had appeared first. Given the level of revision, transparency with the readers required that they be given some kind of heads up, even an explanation. Well, yeah, I mean, if you're in the journalism business, sure. If you're in the propaganda business, eh, not so much. And the reason this particular story is important, beyond the obvious that Dr. John mentioned, is that one of the, if you look around on social media, one of the things that you'll find the hilarians blathering on about is that old commie Bernie Sanders has never accomplished anything. I mean, he's only gotten two bills passed, and one of them was naming a post office. When in fact, he has been one of the more effective members of either body. He uses the amendment process, as the original version of that article pointed out, he uses the amendment process with something that can only be called real mastery. And along the way, forges unlikely, alliances and compromises. That's something called getting things done. And in light of the fact that, the Congress is what the Congress is, well, any president who hopes to accomplish anything with that Congress is going to need a substantial bit of experience in process. And thus it becomes an important article. But yeah, I think Dr. John's analysis is likely correct. Somebody picked up the phone. No, nobody picks up the phone anymore. Somebody took the phone out of their pocket or wallet or back pocket, a purse, what have you, and told Siri or whoever Siri's cousin is over on Android to call editor Thumbfingers at the New York Times. Only they probably didn't call the editor. They probably called, the folks up there in the thin oxygen and said, you can't be publishing nice things about Bernie Sanders. I thought we were friends. And so a series of phone calls get made down the line until the reporter's actual work is turned into a shadow of what it was intended to be. Arthur in the chat room says, psst, getting things done is French and gay. Now, pragmatism, that's real progress. Indeed, indeed. And Carol Baker notes, all the Hillary people using the slimy headlines to smear Bernie aren't going to find this so cute when they use the tactic on Clinton. And they will. Oh, yeah. No, but see, Carol, it'll still be Bernie's fault and those of us who support him, because if everybody would have just sat down and let her have a nice little Democratic primary coronation where she didn't have to spend any money or debate anybody, everything would have been okay. Right. I guess. Kind of. I don't know. But it would be kind of fun. Although no one will ever give up the name. It would be kind of nice in the name of, what's that? Transparency? What Margaret Sullivan was talking about? It would be kind of neat to know who twisted which appendage to get those changes made. And I had a follow-up last night from our buddy Jay, out in the desert, either Arizona or Mexico, depending on Jay's predilection at the moment. Jay wrote in last night saying it's time for everybody to, circle the wagons around Hillary. And Jay followed up saying, my mind works slowly these days, so I tend to keep things brief. I should have begun my note with a fuller explanation rather than just a conclusion. Instead, I beg you to go to Norman Goldman's website and listen to the podcast of the first hour of his Wednesday, March 16th program. Without ads, it's only 38 minutes long. He posts the first hour of all of his programs for all access without subscription. I myself am a huge, huge, I tell you, Bernie fan, as is Goldman. But, there's that word, Norm explains his conclusions on the facts as his research suggests.
And at this point, he is far more articulate than I can hope to be. I will add that I spend a lot of time following up on his suggested sources, and for the most part come away with much the same conclusions. I completely agree with you. I, too, would most certainly rather have Bernie Sanders as president than Hillary Clinton, but we must keep at least the White House out of Republican control at any cost, even if that means accepting Mrs. Clinton. Not a small part of that would be gaining full control of the Supreme Court over the next 30 years. As to the some people say that if Clinton is the nominee, Trump will win, it's simply not borne out by the polls or the analysts who most often get these things correct. To the contrary, Hillary is predicted to win with an even larger margin than Obama did in 2012. Give Norm a listen. I promise you won't regret it, and when I get time, I will. I really, really will. I think, for me, and I don't necessarily, and I don't think Jay was suggesting this, but other people have. This business of give up on Bernie and create some sort of unified field theory around Hillary in the remaining primary states, it just doesn't wash for me. And beyond obvious reasons, look, I've talked at some length over the last couple of months that the West Virginia legislature has been in session. They are mercifully gone now. But they're going to come back and have a special session to deal with the budget because they somehow couldn't get their thumbs out of their asses long enough to do the actual job that they were supposed to do. Now, they had time to ban Common Core, and they had time to attack science standards because children might learn about global climate change. But the one thing they absolutely had to do, they couldn't, and that was pass a budget. And so they thought they would come back in a special session, which will then cost the people of the state of West Virginia a horse-gagging load of money, which, I might add, we don't have, to do something they should have done in the first place, but didn't want to do with everybody watching, and nobody pays attention because it'll be a special session, and it'll be spring, and people will be out fishing, and turkey hunting, and four-wheeler riding, and dirt bike riding. Yeah, that was going on earlier, probably still is. And so they won't have to worry about anybody finding out some of the dirty tricks they plan to get up to in order to pass a budget. At least that's the thinking. But this legislature got here because, in the case of West Virginia, whole boatloads we're landlocked. Whole truckloads of voters stayed home because there was a Negro in the White House who was a waging a war on coal with his job killing regulations from the EPA. Right? And so it is that a two-legged turd, a two-legged talking turd like Tom Fast, a religious maniac with a brain, well, let's put it this way, if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ant's motorcycle and ride it halfway around a BB. Tom Fast was elected by essentially 15.1% of the registered voters of my county. Down ballot matters. Most of the problems in this country are not created by a president or even a Senate or a House. Most of the problems in this country are created by state and county legislative bodies, state legislators, county commissions, that sort of thing. More on that in a minute. And there are people out there who are good people, who are running for office, who are real
progressives who need the excitement of the voters who feel the burn. And there are a ton of states that still haven't voted, not the least of which are, you know, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington, Oregon, California. Mm-hmm. New Jersey hasn't voted. Has Rhode Island voted? West Virginia hasn't voted. The Democratic side, has Kentucky? I don't think so. Maryland? Connecticut? And not just, you know, and those voters deserve the opportunity to vote for Senator Sanders. And the people running down ballot deserve to have enough excitement to garner them some votes. I mean, we're living the effects of staying home right now in West Virginia. And they are hellish effects. People have had their wages cut by the legislature. They've had their wages disappeared by the legislature. And we've got to have that momentum in May to get good candidates on the Democratic side of the ballot to get rid of the freaks in November. Or else it may very well become intolerable. And one last thing. Hillary's people would like to go into the convention looking with the numbers looking better than they will if Bernie stays in. Because if Bernie stays in and does as well as we expect in the progressive states, the really dark blue states, it could actually be, by the time the convention opens, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton may have the votes she needs. But the vote will be a lot closer than they would like to have it. They want a wider margin. But they're calling for that wider margin at the expense of people down ballot. And I find that to be a damn shame. And certainly undemocratic and not even remotely progressive. With his beloved Jennifer over here in the United States working for Bernie in Western Australia, Graham writes, "But everyone's a savant reader of the future now. While the truth is that between Hillary and Bernie, it's closer to 50-50 than the media will allow us to see. That's a toss-up, not a foregone conclusion. Whereas, if we give up on Bernie, then we will know the future. If we give up on Bernie, we will have given up on Bernie. Why would we want to do that? I'm stumped, Bob. Bernie is inspiring people in ways Jennifer says hasn't happened for many decades. We're supposed to just hand that off? Sorry, I say we. I'm not an American, but I'd hope to live there one day." No, you can say we. You're a citizen of the planet, Graham. What we fuck up over here has ripples that affect the whole world. So go ahead and say we. And Jennifer's right. Bernie is inspiring people in ways that people have not been inspired on the Democratic side of the ticket in a very, very long time. The only other particular example being 2008.
And remember, we remember that slogan, right? That campaign slogan, 2008, yes, we can, si se puede. Yes, we can. And yet along comes a candidate who is preaching the same message. Yes, we can. Yes, we can have health care for every American citizen. Yes, we can make college a reality for everyone who is qualified and wants to go. Yes, we can make sure that no child goes to bed hungry in America. As Texas Betsy points out, the way we talk about Bernie is like my mom spoke about JFK. On the subject of Norman Goldman, Thomas the Drunken Lesbian, I get to use that now, says, I adore Norm. He was one of my first interviews, but he's wrong. This is a movement, a 50-state strategy. I haven't heard what he has to say. I'm sure logically it's accurate, but this is more than just the presidency, and that's something Hillary Clinton supporters aren't getting. This is a revolution. And I'm not even, I know we keep using the word revolution, but over on a commenter over on another Facebook page has lately been saying, revolution, revolution, don't those people know what revolution means? It means guns, it means blood in the streets. Maybe that's what it means other places. It doesn't always mean, so I guess Bernie needs to be saying we're having a bloodless revolution. What? Tim from L.A., under the subject line Journalism in College, says, this is why programs like yours are so important and why people must contribute to the show. Program. We call it a program, Tim, not a show. This isn't an entertainment. There are no curtains. There's no jugglers. There are no magic acts. No rabbits coming out of hats. This is a program, not a show, Tim. I studied journalism in college, Tim continues, and one thing my professor always stressed is that we write truthfully. We must be careful when we write and avoid libel and gross factual error. My professor also stressed that as journalists, we are the watchdog of the government. Our school paper was in trouble, and the professor was fired, albeit temporarily, because we exposed a professor for owning an illegal massage parlor. Ew! This embarrassed the school because the professor who owned the house of ill repute was using the school's address as the office on his checks. Oops. We actually found the checks in the trash can on campus. This was such a no-no that the administrators fired my prof. The prof sued and got her job back. Our professor was happy we did our job as reporters, and we gave a proverbial black eye to the administrator. We also gave a black eye to the so-called supporters because our goal is to expose the truth. Yet the Times seems to have given up their journalistic integrity and their objectives, their objectivity, to report the news according to the AP-style handbook, the Journalist's Bible, and threw their integrity out with the bathwater. So yes, college journalist classes and programs like yours and Mike are the last bastion of journalism. Your opinions are, in fact, the truth, and nothing is holding you back. So yes, folks, go to Head On Radio Network and contribute to the horn. Thank you, Tim. Thank you very kindly. And yes, yes indeed, 2 minutes before the hour, we have a $50 challenge on the table, which will, if when met, come up to half of what we need to raise tonight. We are being ground into the dirt by bills right now. And we haven't yet had our $150,000 crowdfunding campaign. You know, $150,000 crowdfunding campaign without having produced a single minute of programming. Sorry, I saw that being discussed in the chat room earlier. Pay no mind. No, we just try to raise $200 every evening, and some nights it's a real damn struggle. But we have people who put challenges on the table to encourage people to contribute and double their money, and we've got that. The first $50 that come in get doubled this evening, courtesy of Dr. John. Thank you, Dr. John, and thank you to everyone who responds. Thank you indeed. In the chat room, Arthur says, seems to me that the soul of the DLC third way, i.e. Hillary political strategy, is that somehow striving to be as ineffectual as possible is actually some kind of genius move. It's pragmatic. Well, and that's the difference. It seems to me, and I'm not trying to be mean, Bernie says, yes, we can, just like Obama said, yes, we can. And Hillary says, no, we can't, we're not Denmark. So, you know, what the... In the chat room, Dogman says, yes, Bob, and Bernie bets peeps in the West want the chance to vote for him. He's not a dull person. Bern has the enthusiasm of the progressives. While the longer you know who on our side talks, the less we are enamored with her. Well, it's those, you know, it's those, hey, lady, what time is it? And then you get 1,000 words telling you how to build a watch answers. Exactly. Meanwhile, Marty says, this might sound contrarian, but over this week I have gone from Sanders in the primary, support and vote for Clinton if she wins. There's no way I will vote for Clinton. Granted, I'm in blue state California, but I'm sick of being told that because my state's primary is in June, I don't have a choice as to who I want to be nominated. Like Judge Schmale saying, you'll support Clinton and like it. Improve your lie, Judge Schmale. To borrow from the angry Indian, fuck that. Give me Clinton and I'll do is vote on the down ballot races. Give me Clinton and all I'll do is vote on the down ballot races. If this means we end up with Cruz or Drumpf, then maybe that's what needs to happen. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. I really don't want that. I don't want to be told I have to pray to somebody. And I don't want nudge and a wink, oh, you don't have to pray if you don't want to. You know, it's your soul. So I understand what Marty's getting at. And there's a larger discussion. We really do focus hard, we can't help it, on presidential politics. But this is a discussion for the evening. And if you feel like you'd like to chime in on it, I welcome you. It's a thought experiment. And it goes like this. Go back to 1992. Now, in 1992, Pappy Bush, George H.W. Bush, was running for re-election. He was running for re-election against the Democratic nominee, Bill Clinton, and an independent by the name of Ross Perot. All his long life, he had been Ross Perot until he got some money in his pocket, and then all of a sudden he became French and became Ross Perot. Kind of like Hercule Poirot. As Graham notes, exactly, people are inspired by people who are inspired, not by people who tell one to be inspired. Inspiration itself is infectious. Not much inspiring about being told to be practical, is there? Ew. But those were the three people, the three main players running for president of the United States. And as we all know, the victor was Bill Clinton.
And Bill Clinton came into office already swaddled in scandal. Remember almost all the stuff that plagued Bill Clinton during his presidency stemmed from things that happened before Bill Clinton was president. Now, the actual stained blue dress, that happens during the presidency. And it was so much soap opera crap. But it also provided what we would go on to recognize as reality TV cover. I mean, reality television hadn't even been born yet. We were still watching real TV shows back then. But if you think about it in terms of reality TV, the first reality television shows were, one, the Clinton scandals, and two, the OJ case. But along the way, we got the Omnibus Crime Bill. We got the for-profit prison system. We got welfare reform. More on that. We got the repeal of Glass-Steagall. We got the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And we didn't get health care. And it was all just a mess. We got NAFTA. We got permanent most favored nation trading partner status for China. A lot of this stuff, as it turns out, was just the second term of George H.W. Bush. The only difference being that had George H.W. Bush been reelected, it's quite possible that the Newt Gingrich contract on America doesn't flip the House of Representatives to the Republicans, and so beloved things like NAFTA that began in the first Bush administration would never have gotten out of Congress. George H.W. Bush would never have had the brass or the nerve to offer up something like the welfare reform that the Clintons handed us. And the kneecapping job that they did on the poor. I voted twice for Bill Clinton. I voted twice for Barack Obama. I voted for Al Gore. I voted for John Kerry. I voted for Michael Dukakis. I voted for Walter Mondale. Those are the presidential elections in which I've been able to participate. I have never voted for a Republican presidential candidate. I don't plan on starting. But it is, at the very least, an interesting thought experiment to ponder whether or not we place entirely too much emphasis on presidential campaigns. It is an absolute fact that we could affect more meaningful change in this country
by creating an unassailable democratic... Okay, let's go. I mean, we're dreaming now. This is a thought experiment. You know, we could affect more meaningful change in this country by electing a good progressive House of Representatives district by district than any number of Democratic presidents. This is in no wise taking anything away from Bernie. And yes, the president does get to appoint Supreme Court justices and cabinet secretaries and agency heads. No getting around that. And that's important. But really, just sort of tease that little thread out a ways. George H.W. Bush beats Bill Clinton because Ross Perot stays out of the race. And you realize if Ross Perot had stayed out of the race, George W. Bush would have beaten Bill Clinton. H.W. Bush. So that means he's out of his second term in 1996. What then? Democrat? Republican? We don't know. Probably wouldn't have been W, because W was motivated by jealousy of Clinton for having beat his daddy. He beat my daddy. Just like a few years later, he would use as motivation for an illegal war against the people of Iraq. They tried to kill my daddy. Saddam tried to kill my daddy. Does 9/11 happen? Who knows? That's why this is one of the most tantalizing games that historians play about halfway into the bourbon bottle. But do we put too much emphasis on presidential elections? And I don't want to hear, Bob, have you lost your mind? I've already made my position clear. If Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is the nominee, I will vote for her. And I know there are people who disagree with me on that. We'll just have to agree to disagree. But honestly, instead of being trapped forever in the present like a fly in amber, try to project outwards. Consider things economic, things foreign policy, things domestic. What happens if you get a President Trump? What happens? Will half the Congress be in rebellion against him? Three quarters of the Congress? I don't know. Will those fools finally take the bit in their teeth and get rid of Social Security? I don't know. But it's worth thinking this stuff through. Oh, and one other thing. Somewhat different, well, totally different topic. Merrick Garland. And the song these Republicans are singing right now, we need to let the next president appoint the Supreme Court justice. Okay, let's take them at their word. Let's tease that thread out, too. Let's say it's President Hillary we're talking about. Shall we? President Hillary gets inaugurated on January the 20th, 2017. And on January the 21st, 2017, she does what we all know a President Hillary will do. She nominates a nice, tepid, corporate Supreme Court justice, who we hope would actually stand up for, if nothing else, and believe me, it's probably nothing else, a woman's right to choose. What happens then? Well, while I do not have my tattered velvet robe handy with the frayed appliqued moons and stars on them and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," written in glow-in-the-dark paint across the front, and my magic eight ball with the cracked glass that always says "Answer hazy, ask again later," we're not going to get 60 Democratic members of the United States Senate. And that probably means that even if the Democrats were to take back something resembling a majority in the Senate, it will not be veto-proof, or it will not be filibuster-proof, and it's not like the Republicans are going to stage a palace coup and get rid of chinless Mitch McTurtle. So that means once President Hillary nominates her nice, tepid, temperate, corporate Democratic Supreme Court nominee, chinless Mitch will immediately declare that nice, tepid, temperate, corporate Democrat Supreme Court nominee to be the living reincarnation of Leon Trotsky. And will declare that over his dead body, will he ever let some godforsaken hardcore liberal justice ever get onto the Supreme Court bench seat occupied by the heroic and constitutionally original sainted man Antonin Scalia, who was cut down in his prime. Now, I don't have any of my predicting, prophesying stuff, but I guarantee double T you that's what's going to happen. So all of this happy horse shit about let the people decide in November. Yeah, okay, yeah, the people decided in November, and they decided on President Hillary. What now? Fuck 'em. We're senators. Our job is to advise and consent, and we do not advise and we do not consent to this wild-eyed, bomb-throwing liberal that'll have fried fetus for lunch every day. That is how that is going to play out. Note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Want a reality check of sorts, Diane asks? Sanders beat Clinton in the Kansas Democratic Caucus 2-1, and crowds at Sanders' talks in Kansas were the stuff of legends. Yes, they were. And, you know, he even drew big crowds in Alabama, Stan. And Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton is fresh out of Confederacy. You got to remember, the Democratic Party in the South is a very different Democratic Party from the Democratic Party you and I think about. I mean, even if you're running as a Democrat for, say, dog catcher in Morgan County, Alabama, you got to have a line in your ad about how I will be a family values dog catcher in the name of Jesus. It's probably even worth speculating that a majority of Democrats in the South would be okay if abortion were gotten rid of. Well, they've all voted. Because we front-load the hardest right-wing core of the Democratic Party in the primary process. And now we're going to talk with the progressive core of the Democratic Party. You know why the Hilarians want Bernie to go away so badly? Because if he beats her in New York, which is allegedly her home state, it's going to be a terrible embarrassment. Horrible. And even splitting 50-50 in California will be frightening. Because it all assaults the idea of her inevitability and her unbeatability. And good God, between now and June, how many more mistakes can she make? Like the coal mistake this week. Or the Nancy Reagan AIDS mistake. Or the where was Bernie mistake. You get my point. So we've got all of that to ponder. It's 22 minutes past the hour. The $50 challenge from Dr. John is still on the table. It is still unanswered. And I'm going to take a break. And it being Thursday and all, Thursday, St. Paddy's Day, 2016, 17th of March, we've got the Green News Report coming up via Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. You're listening to Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
So we'll let it be. I couldn't stop it, so we'll let it be. He didn't do it. He wasn't there. He didn't want it. He wasn't there.
Well, good morning, Judge. Yes, I'm back again. I'm in trouble, so he's back to the pen. I found the car, but I couldn't pay. I found love and I drove it away.
And I drove it away. I fell in love and I drove it away. I fell in love and I drove it away. He didn't do it. He wasn't there. He didn't want it. He wasn't there.
We'll be right back. It's Thursday, March 17, 2016.
The President and I share a common goal.
President Obama and Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau unite to cut the methane.
Oh, no, you didn't.
The Atlantic is out, the Arctic back in for offshore drilling. Score one for Native Americans over mining, plus...
This is the greatest honor of my life.
Obama's Supreme Court nominee could be good news for the environment.
But only if he's actually confirmed. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Americans can do anything. There is no problem before us we cannot solve.
Except for stopping climate change, keeping Florida from sinking into the ocean, and winning the Republican nomination for president. Am I right, Marco Rubio? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen. Well, I know he's out of the race now, and I hate to kick him when he's down, and I really don't mean to pile on poor Marco Rubio.
Oh, no, you don't.
No, you're right. I really don't. I'm sorry, but it is absolutely outrageous that this guy got letters from 16 mayors in his own home state, some of them Republican, begging him to take action on climate change, to keep South Florida from disappearing under the water, and Marco Rubio was running for president, pretending all of this was a conspiracy theory or something. I'm sorry, it's maddening. He will be back. So we need to let people know what Marco Rubio is all about.
Okie dokie then.
Yeah. What else do you have for us today that won't enrage me?
Well, I don't know if it won't enrage you, but President Obama has nominated Judge Merrick Garland, Chief Justice of the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, to the U.S. Supreme Court seat left vacant by the death of Antonin Scalia. Considered a moderate, Judge Garland's rulings on the lower court are difficult to discern, but they have tended to favor the environment. That includes allowing environmental groups legal standing to sue, and he is also upheld the Environmental Protection Agency's authority against industry challenges. Now, that could be very important for Obama's Clean Power Plan, the first ever carbon emission standards for power plants, which is expected to reach the court in the fall, but only if he gets confirmed.
I saw that 350.org was supporting his nomination, but again, that's only if he gets confirmed, and right now that seems to be a very, very long shot.
The Interior Department has proposed major changes to offshore oil and gas drilling in federal waters. In a policy reversal, the administration has withdrawn plans to allow offshore drilling in the Atlantic Ocean for 5 years. That's following protests from hundreds of coastal communities fearing a repeat of the BP oil spill.
Well, that's some good news.
Yeah, the move is a victory for environmental organizations and grassroots groups, but it could be overturned by the next president. However, the offshore drilling changes are a mixed bag. The administration also reversed a policy to protect the fragile Arctic and now proposes to open some of those areas to new oil exploration off the Alaska coast. But after the spectacular failure of Shell Oil's attempt to drill in the Arctic last year, it's unclear whether other oil companies will bid on these new Arctic leases. This draft proposal from the Interior Department is now open for public comment.
I have none.
That's a switch.
Who asked you?
The U.S. will now partner with Canada to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's a major shift in Canadian environmental policy with the election of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who praised the joint agreement at a Rose Garden press conference.
The President and I have announced today that we'll take ambitious action to reduce methane emissions nearly by half from the oil and gas sector, reduce use and emissions of hydrofluorocarbons, and implement aligned greenhouse gas emission standards for heavy-duty vehicles, amongst other plans, to fight climate change.
Did he say to fight climate change?
Yes, he did. He's new.
He's Canadian.
And now the EPA will begin developing methane emission standards for existing oil and gas facilities. That's on top of new rules for new oil and gas facilities. So this is a big deal if it doesn't get reversed by the next president or by the Supreme Court. Finally, a victory for the Apache tribe in Arizona, thwarting a multinational mining company seeking to establish a copper mine on lands sacred to the Apache, but outside their reservation. Arizona Republican Senator John McCain had quietly transferred the parcel to the mine company in a land swap in an unrelated piece of legislation, despite the tribe's protest. But this week, the National Park Service put the area on the National Register of Historic Places. It won't stop the mine, but it will delay it significantly.
Nice. Well done. I saw the Republican response was something about special interests. Yes, an Apache sacred spiritual site is now special interests. Unbelievable. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We've got about an hour and 29 minutes remaining in the program this evening. It is 7:31 here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. This is the horn for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 17th of March, 2016. I'm Bob Kincaid. Ooh, twice now. Yeah. Okay. Before I go anywhere else, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Jim down in Louisiana. Stan, what's happening, Jim?
Oh, not much, but you've inspired me. I'm going to go ahead and put a $10 toward that match. I'll do it about 9:05 my time, so that's 10:05. So that's $50 thing.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. That means we only got $40 to go.
And on top of that, you still have that monthly thing, right?
Yeah, that's right. If we end the month meeting our goal, that means we beat the Swede for another month. We started at 50-60. This month is $70.
No, I mean there's a thing where you donate every month.
The subscription?
Yeah,
that's right there on the page.
Okay, well I'll put another $10 on that.
Well, thank you, Jim. So, thank you very kindly.
It inspired me. I mean, what's interesting when you were talking about, I mean, like you said, Hillary has a way of opening up her goddamn mouth and just pissing you off to no end. I mean, almost every time I see her, she pushes me.
Well, but Jim, that's kind of subjective. I mean, there are those among us, and I'm not saying you're one of them. But there are those among us if it was nothing but video of Hillary Clinton saying "Good morning, world," it would engender paroxysms of rage.
Yeah, even when she didn't mean to, like those points you gave, it's just.
Well, I mean, there are just people out there who hate the very air she breathes.
Well, I'm not crazy about her, but I know politics is a dirty game,
Jim, it reminds me of something, and I still hold to this, but I haven't mentioned it in a while, that every time I would get frustrated with Barack Obama, and I've spent 8 years being periodically frustrated with Barack Obama, this little audio loop would play in my head, you know, with that CBS or ABC News special report, dum 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 dum. This is a special report. We take you now to the White House, where Vice President Sarah Palin is being sworn in as President of the United States after the tragic death from skin cancer of John McCain. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be okay with Barack Obama." because it's easy to forget what we could have had. I mean, is there anybody out there that thinks this country would have been better off with Willard Romney at the helm and Eddie Munster?
Oh, yeah.
But that's also contrary to what I was saying about Bill Clinton in 1992, and I recognize that.
I know, well, it's like in 2000, I voted for McCain, and I, like I say, when I get, and it doesn't take a lot, and it's also like what you see some Hillary supporters, and it's weird, the way they go so slimily after Senator Sanders, and I'm not saying he's insane or anything, but some of it's just off-the-wall bullshit, and others is just, I'm pretty sure it's... sounds like blatant lies. Or what I remember one was like, well, he didn't get into, he's been in, they kind of overlooked the fact that he was in the House and the Senate for 30 plus years. But they kind of make a big deal out of, he really didn't do anything till he was 30, except for that. You know, and I know he did.
Yeah, neither did Jesus.
In my book, allegedly, I think. But, you know, it's just their arguments are so lame, and then that adds to more fuel to, like, screw it, I'll just vote for Jill Stein, you know? But as of right now, I'm going Bernie 100%. And
well, honestly, a Jill Stein vote just seems silly to me, but that's me.
No, I'm not going to do well. The other one is the other threat I've heard is, well, I'm going to vote for what's his name? Not insane McCain. Trump. I wouldn't even vote. You know, I'd like to vote just to, you know.
Well, I mean, look, there's a number of different ways to look at this. If you have the luxury of being in a state where Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton doesn't have a snowball's chance in heat wave hell of winning, you know, in other words, all those states that she just used to bolster her delegate count.
Yeah,
you can vote for Jill Stein or Bozo the Clown or Ralph Nader or anybody else you want to, and it's not going to make a hill of beans worth of difference. Because yeah, those states are going to go for whoever the Republican nominee is.
Yeah, I'm in Louisiana, Stan, as you know, and that's probably pretty much going to happen. So I might do my little protest vote anyway.
Right.
If Bernie doesn't get it. Bernie gets in, well, I'm thinking affirmatively. I'm feeling the burn. You know, I'm you know, Bernie, when he gets the nomination, probably won't win any of the Confederacies in Confederate states. I would vote for Senator McCain. Not McCain. No, I would not vote for Senator McCain. I would vote for Senator Sanders.
Yeah. I didn't think you meant McCain.
But, it's important, you know, and that's definitely why Hillary's doing that. And I don't know what I've seen it on, once again, the internet, but it's like a third, 33% or something like that, of Bernie voters won't vote for Hillary if she gets it. And I think part of it's the way she's run the campaign.
But some of that, I think, will ameliorate over time. At least it usually does.
But also her, I don't know, she just got a real arrogant way about her. So, but
remember, in 2008, before she bowed out in June, there were Hillary partisans who were screaming, "No way will I vote for that Obama." They came around.
Yeah. Well, that's, hopefully I don't have to face that. The deal with the devil, what is it, devil's...
Well, I mean, I think, Jim, that at least if we're going to be grown-ups about this, I mean, God, you lived in Vegas. You lived in the land of odds. Okay? See what I did there?
Yeah.
Right. We have to acknowledge that it's probably about 60-40, 65-35 against Bernie being the nominee. And if that's the case, well, there are decisions to be made. Now, me, for my part, you know, I'm not going to say I'm withholding my vote, but my degree of enthusiasm for her candidacy will be significantly impacted by, if she is the nominee, her willingness to adopt some of Bernie's positions. And I think back, although maybe it's not the best example, I was a Dennis Kucinich supporter in 2004. And Dennis was the only one who was out there talking about what a disaster our healthcare system was, what an imperative having healthcare for all Americans was. He was absolutely unapologetic on the Iraq War, and lo and behold, as the primaries unfolded, there's John Kerry adopting a whole bunch of Dennis's policy positions. John Kerry was not talking about healthcare very much at all until Dennis made it an issue. So at the convention in Philly, I would actually like to hear, if she's the nominee, I would like to hear Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, in her acceptance speech, declare health care is a basic human right. Children have a basic human right not to go hungry, and it is the duty of the government, of we the people, to see to it that they don't. Now, if she can start talking like a real progressive, I'll feel a little bit better about supporting her in the general election. But if she just behaves in a mulish and prideful fashion and says, "Oh hell no," well, you get my vote, and that's about it.
Yep.
Kathy says something similar in the chat room. Kathy says, "Bob, she'll have to take up Bernie's position on several things, or she won't get any of the millennials."
Unless she does something really, from what I can see, I don't see how she's going to get very much of that back. I mean, let's see. Because, see, when you're young like that, I mean, I used to be young like that. So you think that won't take, you know, four years or 8 years, that's not going to be that much time. Let's say you're 21 when you say that. Next thing you know, you're 30, 29, 30. And things have a whole new different hue to it, you know. I don't have to talk to you or much of the Hunt family because they've been there, or they're there now. I mean, it's like me, in 8 years, I'll be 64. I won't have to imagine being, you know, when I get older, losing my hair. That song will be me if I make it 8 more years.
Yeah, 8 years from now, if I'm still around, I'll still be a long damn way from Social Security.
Oh, wow. Well, that's another reason I'm big for Bernie. I mean, and it makes so much sense, and if Hillary would adopt that, I think that would help about improving Social Security. She doesn't seem any different than your boy Trump on Social Security. He just says he won't touch it, and basically that seems like her it's going to be her line. Whereas I think a big thing she could do, like, okay, let's do a thought experiment, Hillary. Imagine you weren't worth millions of dollars and you had to live off Social Security. How would things be different? Maybe you want to help these people out. You know, but I mean, maybe she's listening in tonight and she'll think about that.
Maybe indeed. Yep.
Yeah. right, well, I said my little piece. Yeah, I'll get that in, I guess, around 9:05, 9, something after, what's his name, Malloy's show. Because I can't interrupt the stream of consciousness. I get going between you two.
It's just one long Faulkner novel.
Yeah, well, it's like a mini acid trip. So.
without the aching muscles from the strychnine, right?
Yeah.
All right, Jim, you take care. Good talking to you. That's our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Both lines are open if you want to converse. Area code 304-574-8178 or area code 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And thank you very kindly to Jim for jumping in on the fundraising. And thank you very kindly as well to Joan for meeting Dr. John's challenge. And thank you as well to Marcia. Thank you very, very much indeed. So we are getting closer and closer to actually having met the fundraising goal for the evening. And that's very, very important. Just got word of some repair bills that are kind of breathtaking. But oh well. We'll cross our fingers. So, email. Coming from Kim in New York City. Clinton talking about Bernie's issues. I'm sorry, but even if you think there's a chance that Clinton will talk about progressive ideals, do you really believe she's not going to change her tune once she becomes president, a la Obama? Why should we believe anything that she says just to be elected? I don't know. And I don't say that out of frustration. That's a real possibility. I mean, politicians lie. But again, there's that down ballot thing in November as well. And I don't know what it'll take to get people to the polls, but maybe we really are being eaten up by our fascination with presidential politics. I don't know. Let's see. I mentioned earlier, more on that later, talking about state and local politics. Yeah. Oh, wait. Could it be? It might be. Is that Todd?
Hi, Bob.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Great. Okay. We are where we are in terms of our plight. I think you were very eloquent in what you said. In terms of folks, the down ballot type of thing, because that's how the Koch brothers got this Tea Party thing off of the ground. You know, they started low. You know, they started grassroots and worked up. So what we have to do, and you know, we've forgotten our civics. Everybody's dumbed down. We need to remember that just like they thwarted, Obama wasn't the best, but guess what? We have no metric to understand how good or bad he could have been if it was a normal presidency. Because we have to remember that the Obama presidency was similar to the desegregation of schools. You know, this is new territory.
Yeah, and a lot. I think we've had a little bit of all deliberate speed, too.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. It does, and that's why I said I think we've had some all deliberate speed that goes with it. You know, nice and slow. Let's not upset the white apple cart.
So you know, we can't forget, even if, I mean, I really still firmly believe that Trump will not be the nominee because he can't afford to take a pay cut. All he wants to do I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked. There's a couple of things I was shocked about, and I'm going to get this straight tonight with you because I feel guilty sometimes, but seriously.
Well, don't.
Let me go back with 1 second. I was very disappointed with Hillary Clinton after her second win, maybe, over Bernie. When it took her like 3.5 minutes to adopt his talking point. And I was like, what the fuck? This is what this man just said, and now you're saying it? How are we supposed to believe this? Are you aware of what I'm talking about?
Oh, sure. And Saturday Night Live parodied that with real genius this past weekend. Did you see that? Did you see that bit?
No, I stopped watching it when they weren't funny anymore.
I watched the clips online, and this was a good one because it starts out with Hillary, with a bunch of millennials around her, and she says, "And I believe everything that you millennials believe, whatever it is, and there's so many of you." And then with each frame, she begins to transform a little bit more. And she said, I always thought when I always said when I was a little boy growing up in Brooklyn. And then by the final frame, she's completely morphed into Bernie Sanders.
Well, that's what it was like. I'm sorry, laughing. Oh, well, okay, so I don't feel bad. I was so turned off with her after that. I was like, my God, you really have to rub this into us. I'm thinking about Jill Stein. I really am.
You're one of those people who lives in a state where it doesn't matter if you vote for Hillary Clinton, Jill Stein, Bozo the Clown, or anybody who's not the Republican. You live in South Carolina. They're going to vote for whatever fascist the GOP puts forward.
Exactly. Exactly my point. Exactly. So, you have to make a stand where you can. But the thing is, Hillary, this is going to be interesting because I really don't believe that, and like I said before, Trump can't take a pay cut. Okay.
I'm not being mean or anything, but I disagree with you. He's been at this long enough that all of a sudden, look, for a guy who craves power, the pay cut doesn't matter. He'll be fine. There'll be somebody managing his blind trust. He'll turn the business over to his sons. In fact, he made a point of saying that in the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I can't wait to turn the business over to my boys and let them deal with the mob contracts and whatnot. But the presidency of the United States is the biggest, I'm going to be crass, it's the biggest dick stiffener in the world, okay? It is. It's the most powerful aphrodisiac for anyone who is power hungry that has ever existed on the planet. So no, he can take the pay cut. He'll be all right.
But I don't know. Something's gonna. He might have a heart attack because remember? Do you remember the second time he? I think it was his second win.
Oh, I think he's probably got a liver like a goose. The man looks like a drunk.
He let his ego out, and I was disgusted. Now remember, I'm probably angry. Where I remember reading New York Times in the 80s, the B section, the Metro section in the 80s when I was living in New York State. Right? He's a scumbag. I mean, every week, there was at least two stories a week of what scummy things he was doing to poor people. Right? But my point is that he told everyone. He said, "I'm greedy. I'm greedy. I'm greedy." Oh wait, and he caught himself. Oh, but I want to be greedy for you too. Right. And then he says, oh, and lower educated. Oh, I love you because I can manipulate you. And that's what he was saying. So basically, he shit on their heads, right, and they're clapping. And that just feeds into his hubris, right? But see, his hubris is going to give him a heart attack.
And so then we ask the question, who would be the VP nominee? Right now, by virtue of the fact that he's let himself be kicked around twice in public, it's looking like Chris Christie.
Well, they're so crazy over there. After Scalia died mysteriously, I don't know what to say. But back to our time,
the untimely death of that vigorous, youthful Antonin Scalia. Yes, mysteriously.
I mean, that was just too weird. I'm sorry, but that just...
Well, no, it does get a little bit weird, Todd, because dude died on a secret all-boys weekend of a meeting of St. Hubertus?
Hell no. Hell fucking no.
Hell yes, did you not know that?
No, I know, but I'm just saying...
They were having a clavern meeting.
They wear
green robes with hoods and shit.
Oh my god.
And it's a secret rich people society for people who like to shoot animals that have been living in cages.
Oh, that's right. That German, that widow German,
That
called. Well, you know, his little funny hats and all that stuff and his little slippers, I guess he was very serious about it. So But see, the thing is, Bernie, I'm not counting Bernie out, and this is why I say this. We don't know. We do not know. There's some other stuff. We're in a different waters, as they say. We're in new waters, right, in Washington. And there's so much brewing. There's so much at stake. We don't even know if Hillary will make it to the end. But what we do know is that, like you said, see, Clinton, I live in the South now. I'm not from here, but I live in the South. And like you said, I had no idea. First of all, people do not like people from the North here. They really don't. They'd rather deal with the step and fetch it Negro than anybody from the North.
Yeah, you're not even the kind of Yankee that they like, because you didn't come down there to play golf and leave.
Yeah, they don't like me. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, by the way, did you happen to notice this? Because I did earlier this week. That there's a don't go in the water warning for the beaches there at Myrtle.
Uh-huh.
Because of all kinds of bacterial yuckiness that just sort of runs off the streets of Myrtle Beach and North Myrtle Beach and all of that. And the, you know, the water doesn't clear it away. So like if you go into the water with like a cut on your finger, you can get out of the water and a baby's arm will grow out of your head.
Well, yeah, well, you know, that's not a good thing, because I don't know if you know this, but the STDs in South Carolina, because our legislature, are rampant because they refuse to fund adequately the public health center. So gonorrhea, syphilis, you know, stuff that we shouldn't be dealing with is rampant. So that stuff runs, into the water, and, you know, oh, between that and the Zika, oh my God, the standing water, it's like these people are so stupid sometimes, they put out pails like upright, like, let me catch some water. I like mosquitoes, you know, so we'll be dealing with that. But this thing.
I'm sorry, that's the understatement of the evening, so we'll be dealing with that.
Oh no, I'm serious, these people are, listen, what kind of state, I'm going to be honest with you, I just got back from Florida, right, I had to go down to Florida for a week. And on the way back...
Sucks to be you.
No, I was going to a funeral.
Oh, sorry. Pretty. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. Man, all the people are getting old. I mean, I'm old. Everybody's older, so... But my point is that... all right, in our bylines, in the legislature here, it says the state is only... the state can only provide minimally adequate education. Now, that's in the laws. But minimally adequate. So when you get to South Carolina, you cannot trust the street signs even on the highway, because the folks don't read that well. They're really not, and they don't use turn signals. I mean, you know, when you drive through South Carolina, you make sure your insurance is up to date and your tires are proper and all that kind of stuff, because bad things can happen. But all right. So now I had to say that because you brought up Myrtle Beach. Myrtle Beach is wonderful and great and everything. South Carolina has some nice beaches, but, you know, because too much big government, they don't regulate anything. But back to Bernie. This is what I say about Bernie. See, now that she's done with the South, just like you said a couple weeks ago, and you see, you're spot on. You see, people hate in the South. I had no idea. They do not. They hate that. They hate not dislike. They don't. They hate Hillary Clinton. Forget about it. They don't. They'd rather vote for Lucifer than Hillary Clinton. They don't like Hillary Clinton. Period. So this is all trumped out down here, right? Doesn't matter. Republican, Democrat, blah blah blah. Doesn't matter. Either Cruz or Trump. That's it. But see, now we're moving to the West. Bernie's hanging in there. He knows. Come on, that man started at 3%, and he's getting money. Anytime, you know, his ad campaign is like, I need some money. I want to continue. That's all I have to say. Boom, he's got $40 million. That's some shit. Do you understand me? That's the people talking.
Yeah.
And I think the people are, listen, this is not, and I'm telling you, what we have to watch out for is these electronic voting machines. I think he's already gotten shitted twice in two states. We have to be vigilant about these electronic voting machines. We need to start demanding.
Well, did I read somewhere earlier today that Bernie is finally the winner in Missouri?
Well, he should be if he's not. I'm telling you, if he's serious, he seems like he's putting
To use boxing terminology or a boxing metaphor, Todd, she still hasn't scored. You know, she still hasn't scored the punch out. I mean, winning big in Mississippi and Arkansas is like fighting a tomato can.
But I have to accept that we're in a different paradigm now. And I say that because the two outliers, the two most unlikely people really are the most popular, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And look, they overlap on issues. They overlap on trade, right? So really, this is really, honest to God, I'm not even talking about Hillary right now. But we are right now as America, we have a choice between good and evil. Look at the people who go to Trump rallies. You can get with that, or you can be with somebody who's honest and decent. This is where America is. And, you know, I don't blame Trump. I blame the Americans who follow him. That means you had that racism in you all the time. You know, he's just giving you a voice. So, and remember, Trump says, oh, and the police. Oh, I love you, police. Oh, you're getting treated so badly. Oh, that's code word for, yeah, I can't wait for me to get in office. You beat those blackheads again like we used to. That's what that shit is about. I'm just trying to tell you. I know that. I've been there. I've been beat. I know that. And listen, we're not having that shit anymore. People are tired. I don't know. This is we're in a different realm. But Hillary has got to do better. I don't know. The more she talks, people, everybody, it's like, ugh. Like, just be quiet, and like, we're gonna have to vote for you, but just stop talking. And you know, it's not, I'm not the only one saying that, I don't think. But I don't know.
No, you're not the only one saying that. I measure my words here. Because I don't want to come across or be accused of by any of the hilarians of misogyny, sexism, yada yada yada. Because I'm not. I'm just having it, you know. I'm just having a hard time, I guess. And because I'm a real progressive, I'm the real deal. I mean, I hold views that are deemed almost terrifying, apparently, by a whole bunch of the country. I mean, I really, honest to God, Todd, believe. You've been promoted. You're a deity now. I believe that every American, when he or she needs to, should be able to go to the doctor and not worry about who's paying.
Right.
And that is apparently, right. That's apparently wild-eyed radical. And I still, and from the Hillary standpoint, we know where Bernie stands on that. He wants everybody to have health care. But Hillary has still not explained how she's going to get health care to working people, you know, the working poor in Alabama or Mississippi, Stan, or where you are in South Carolina, Stan. Because there ain't no way that the legislatures are going, or the governors, are going to accept the Medicaid expansion. Because if you start letting people go to the doctor when they're sick, the next thing you know, they'll start thinking they're human beings, and then they're going to get all kinds of uppity on you and think that they're a political force or something, and that their opinions matter, and that their lives matter. And Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has yet to say anything that I've seen or read or heard about how she's going to get health care to those people. And it fucking matters, Todd. It matters.
That, I know it matters. And that's what bothers me, is because you know and I know that that woman is just a little... And listen, don't get me wrong. I'm like you. I'm like, you know what? In our stage, in America's stage in the game, you know, we count ourselves as the greatest democracy on earth. However, the largest, most populous democracy is India. They've already had a female leader. You know, we're not as liberal and forward as we like to think we are. It would be great to have a female president, but I don't think this female is the right president, because she has assumed and she has acquired the worst qualities of her opponents, in my opinion, in some areas.
I have never in my life voted based upon genitals or skin tone, race or ethnicity. Never. Not once. Granted, most of the time the people running were white males, so, you know, it's kind of not really hard to make that claim. But I didn't vote for Barack Obama because he was black. I voted for Barack Obama because I thought he was better than Hillary. I didn't vote for Dennis Kucinich because I thought that Serbians were more qualified than Irish. You get my point?
I do get your point. And that's what struck me to call today. When you named out who you voted for, I was like, wow. Well, I remember. It's exciting when you're a teenager. You first time you vote, and you've been following politics. I voted the same way you did. So, you know, at some point, that's why it's so important. See, I don't think I realized how important primaries are. See, but like you said a few weeks ago, that's the same way that a lot of people felt. It's like, I'm going to make, this is the one person in my whole life that I voted for who I could agree with. I can't remember a vote that he's taken, Bernie's given in Congress, a vote that I did not agree with, you know. Anytime you can vote for someone that you cannot think of a vote you disagreed with, that's a great thing.
A lot of hay has been made out of the gun manufacturer immunity bill. I got a problem with that, but I also understand why he voted the way he did. He voted the way he did because he came from a state where that's how people wanted him to vote. And they in many ways they have since changed on that. But it is not the long laundry list of, oh my God, terrible, horrible, very bad, no good judgment that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has evinced. I mean, I walk around talking to myself before the program begins, okay, Todd? I really do. Sometimes Agnes just walks out of the room and says, talk amongst yourself. I was just trying to make a list. You know, stuff Hillary got right the first time. And the only thing that she's been right on the first time that I can recall is a woman's right to choose, and we've even got the clip of her saying she'd be willing to compromise that away. From 2015 saying that.
You know, in my dream world, If Secretary Clinton does get the nomination, in my dream world, I would like to see her be a little conciliatory toward, but then I can't even trust her, toward the issues that Bernie, she's just been very,
malleable about going toward Bernie's side. It's so obvious, and it's just painful. It's just so painful.
She's a Methodist. She's a Methodist, so she probably knows her Bible. And there's that verse where St. Paul says, "Lo, I was all things to all people."
Well, you know what? Sometimes you have to rise above the masses and be a leader. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. If Bernie does not come out very strong or win, I blame Southern blacks because Southern, and I'll be, you know, now that I've been here for a while, I understand. See, Southern blacks are like 20 years behind everybody else, mostly. The bad educational system, generational. And then they don't trust this old white guy from New England. They don't know shit about New England. They don't, you know, it's out of their sphere. It's out of their, you know, out of their realm of consciousness. They don't get it. So, you know, they know nothing. And all they know is old Clintons. Oh, the Clintons, and they were nice to black folk. And he played, you know, it's really that simple.
Well, consider this. Her largest margin of victory was in Mississippi. What state, out of all the Confederate states, has the lowest levels of education?
Mississippi, and then what, Louisiana, and then South Carolina, or something like that.
Oh, I'm sure Alabama's in the mix there somewhere. She won big in Alabama. But even that's dangerous, Todd. Because I don't want to be painted with that brush either. Oh, Bob Kincaid says undereducated black people put Hillary over the top in the South.
No, I said that. Bob didn't say that. No, I said that. And look, I stand by it because I know what I see. I mean, because you ask people about issues, you know, it's like they're not really, they don't get it. But, you know, people are busy, man, and people are hustling, and they're doing what they have to do to keep bread on the table and whatnot. And, you know, this is a politics. Is a strange thing, and unless you're really interested in it, you know, it's easy to be spoon and it's spoon fed. And the other thing is the television. You know, you got a lot of black people here who watch Fox News, and they don't know any different. It's like, oh, they have pretty.
Well, you get Fox News. Yep. You get Fox News on basic cable. You got to pay more for extra for anything else. I mean, maybe you get chicken noodle news on your basic cable. I don't know.
Yeah, well, see, that, you know,
Todd, people, you're right. What you said a minute ago is very true. You said people are busy, people are working, people are hanging. The economic recovery that we've had in this country under Barack Obama, and I'm sure he would probably agree, is not what he'd like to have seen, because it's not an economic recovery of real dignity. The wealth lost by black America as a result of the economic meltdown, the first place that got cleaned out was black America. And then they started coming for the poor whites. People are struggling for all their worth, hanging on for dear life in this country. People are a paycheck away from disaster. People are, you know, one broken tie rod, one thrown rod.
Exactly.
Okay, and yeah. I got a story here, and I've been meaning to get to it, and I'll share it with you on the air, and we'll probably talk about it more afterward. This story's out of Alabama, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
A Republican member of the Alabama Senate by the name of Arthur Orr from Decatur, Alabama, up there in the middle of the north part of the state, you know, maybe 25, 30 miles from the Tennessee line, has introduced a bill with a whole bunch of modifications to the welfare. And one of the things, and it does a lot of things, one of the things it does is it says if you're collecting welfare in Alabama, you will be thrown off welfare if you own an automobile.
What?
Did you really not hear me, or?
No, but that makes no sense. First of all, you have to have a car in the shop because there's no public transportation.
There's no public transportation. We don't have any kind of planning in our cities. Alabama still has a shitload of rural to it. And we're talking about if you've even got so much as a 1979 Chevy Vega. Citation maybe? If you've got one of those, you cannot collect, no food stamps, no temporary assistance for needy families. And whereas the Clinton welfare reform capped temporary assistance to needy families at 5 years, this says, screw that, three. None of that, no food stamps, no nothing if you've got a fucking car.
You know something, those people, right, whoever the authors of that legislation, by default, they are executioners because they're going to kill people by a slow death because most people, like down here, right, they're the pay wages, the pay scale is ridiculous for just regular folk who don't have any education, whatever. They're lucky if they make $10, and then you have to drive to get to work, and you still qualify for SNAP because, you know, they got everybody at 38 hours mostly, you know, below full time. So what they're basically saying is that, yeah, you're gonna be hungry. You know, go to the food bank. That's what they're saying.
Yeah. And this Senator Arthur Orr, of course, a Republican from Decatur, you know he's through the door of the church every time the church door opens, right? I mean, you don't get elected to office in Alabama unless you're all churchy, unless you're church people.
Gotta be. Oh, hell yeah!
So yeah, this Christian, yeah, this follower of Christ, has said that if you have a car, you can't eat. Even a beater. Even something that just barely gets you to work and back. But they don't want you on the well. And see, there ain't even any dog whistles involved with this, Todd. This is a black genocide measure.
Do they understand? People who don't live in the South maybe not don't understand that there are a lot of little towns where you might have a supermarket and you might not, right?
Yeah.
So if you have no car, you're basically landlocked. There's people here. It's like you're living on an island. If you don't have a vehicle, you're on an island. I mean, I had to get used to this. I mean, you know.
Look at it this way. Here's how it works. There's a reason for this. If people can't be on welfare, play with me here, because it might take a generation or so, but if people can't get any kind of welfare help and they can't own a car if they're going to get welfare, well, wouldn't it be a lot simpler if, say, some big landowner said, well, why don't you just live here on my land and work my land and I'll see to it you're fed. And you won't need a car to go anywhere because you'll have a job right here on my land.
You know what that sounds like?
What does that sound like, Todd?
Oh, there's a lot of ways. There's two distinct ways I'm seeing this right now. There's two ways. I'm seeing this as like those cities in China and in Mexico, where basically they have dormitories and they feed them and they basically work.
Well, there's that. There's that. There's that. And then you're and then
fascism.
No, no. Then your well-to-do liberal would say, "Oh my God, Muffy, that sounds like medieval European feudalism." And people with their eyes wide open would get, "No, Muffy, that ain't medieval European feudalism. That's slavery."
Yeah,
that's slavery on the comeback. Because, you know, it's the 13th Amendment says you can't be slaves. But you could sure sign a contract, couldn't you? This all sort of weaves in and out like some sort of toxic blanket. Because you've got one of the darling things of the Republican Party right now. The hardcore ultra right wing conservatives who are, you know, they're appalled. They're appalled by that Trump fellow. Oh my God, I can't believe it. But the fact of the matter is, their policies have been shitty for generations. And one of the things they want to do is they want a Supreme Court justice that will take the Supreme Court back to what is called the Lochner era.
And the Lochner case stands for the proposition. It's probably the second most hateful case ever rendered by the Supreme Court after Dred Scott. The Lochner case cites this bullshit concept called privity of contract that doesn't appear anywhere in the Constitution, that isn't even real, that says that, that said that if a government tried to impose regulations on business for how it treated its workers, it was violating privity of contract, and the working people are free to contract to do anything they want to do, and business was free to offer and they were free to refuse and yada yada yada. And so, you know, if down in Alabama you can just drive people back onto the land working for old Mars and everybody signs contract, well, hell, that ain't slavery, that's business.
These are the political and the business waters that we swim in right now. And that's what I'm saying. We are in very, very critical and scary times. And if you don't know it now, listen. Dr. Bill had said a couple times, this little experiment may not work. We may break up into three or four regions. And I'm telling you, I live where these people will be fine. They would love it. They would be okay with that. They really would. I'm just telling you right now, these people will be okay with that. They don't like Washington. They don't like Northerners. They don't like black people who speak well. You know, they don't like Mexicans unless they're working. You know, and as soon as you get off work, don't be seen on the street, period. You know, and that's where, you know, we're in that kind of place. So I'm just anxious to see how these elections play out when they start going. That's why Bernie's staying in here. He's going to stay in the race because he knows people need a voice. And remember, when they say, how is he going to pay for it? Bernie keeps saying how he's going to pay for it. Remember, Wall Street, they have these high-speed Cray computers. They have algorithms.
Yep.
Right? They make a million trades a second. And they wouldn't want to charge them a penny, the tax Wall Street part.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, a million. Now you know how I am with my ciphering and my gazettas. Let's see. Let's say it's going to be a penny a trade. So a million pennies divided by. So that's $10,000 a second times.
Right.
So that's $600,000 per minute, $36 million per hour, and the trading day is 8 hours long. That's $288 million a day.
There you go.
You know, that could add up to some real money pretty damn quick.
See, but they don't flesh that out on the mainstream news, but that's what Bernie, that's what Bernie has been saying from the beginning, right? Because he adopted that from the tax Wall Street party, okay? Who I've been following with.
Oh, and by the way, a week of that is 1.44 times 10 to the ninth.
Oh, see, I skipped that class. I just went straight to that.
And a year of that is 7.488 times 10 to the tenth.
It's not that difficult. And listen, they're going to continue to...
You're telling me we 7.48 times 10 to the 10th, you're telling me that will not pay for health care and maybe a little bit of college?
Exactly. And we haven't even talked about the window. We want to open up. There's another window we want to open up at the Federal Reserve just for college, just for people to get loans for college. And this dovetails in the last thing I want to talk about. Remember, we print our money. And our money's backed up by our military might, which we have no problem inflicting on folks.
Yeah, otherwise known as the full faith and credit of the United States.
Yeah, so let's just, you know, stop the little BS argument about we don't have the money right there. We print money, and we dare anybody to say we don't. And if you say too much shit, we're going to punch you in the eye and kill you, and that's what we do. But that's okay, that's how we live, whatever, that's how we've chosen to live. So that being said, the Federal Reserve can open up a window at 0%. The federal government for the last, 8 years or more has been able to get money for 0%, which is disgraceful in that the Congress has not yet started working on this highway bill, because money's only going to get more expensive. You understand? Now, I drove back from Florida. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you what we need regulation on. These goddamn tractor trailers. Because I remember this from sociology class way back in the 90s. Tractor trailers are the vehicles that tear up our roads. It's not passenger cars get lighter every year. Even trucks. Ford has a whole new aluminum truck. They're trying to make money. They're ahead of the game. That's good. Aluminum. That's light, right? But the tractor trailers are the ones when you go to downtown Washington, like you do a lot, and you're on this corner. And you look and you see the corners are all dipped down. That's because the tractor trailers have to make these tight turns, and after a while, it tears up the roads. They should pay a little bit more because they're the ones tearing up the road. You know, so don't talk to us about the gas tax. But go back to the 0%. See, we have to get a buddy system. We need to start demanding. Like Frederick Douglass said, power can seize nothing without demand. We have to call our congresspeople, hold them accountable. Say, look, we need our highways fixed. This will create jobs. And if it doesn't, so what? People will still act like they're working, and there'll be money coming in, and our roads will be fixed. Why are we riding around on these fucked-up-ass roads, and people need work? And we got 0%? If somebody said, hey, you know what, that's a nice car over there, and you want to buy it, and you're like, well, but I'm only pulling in X amount of dollars a month. Well, you know, it's 0%. And, you know, just take as long as you make your continual payments on it, don't worry about it. And you're like, well, I have to go to work in the next county and every day, and that's 60 miles. Maybe I should get that car. And maybe that's a bad analogy because I don't like to say the government's like a family because it's not. But, I mean, this is like a no-brainer. So, you know, we have to wake the fuck up and demand shit. We got to demand more as collectively. And everybody who likes Bob Kincaid, please, please support. Because Bob works 24/7 on these things. He really does. And he can't wait to give us his knowledge and insight and to get interaction with like-minded people.
No, I am not the smartest. I am not the smartest progressive broadcaster in the world. Not by a long shot, but I love our conversations. I really, really do. And I'll throw one more thing out there for your consideration, Todd. There's one danger to Bernie's plan to tax transactions. I think we just saw that it can add up to some real damn money pretty damn quick. Now, if you're dealing with Republicans, and, you know, it's like what the Bible says, the Republicans you have always with you. Give that tax a couple of years of money just kind of piling up.
Oh, they're going to steal it.
And pretty soon some Republican's going to come along and say, what we got to do is cut taxes on the rich because it's your money. And by the way, we got all that money laying around. Let's kill somebody. Because they thought about killing my daddy. Can you imagine turning Donald Trump loose with that kind of money?
He can't be trusted.
I'd probably build a wall to damned outer space, that kind of money.
He can't be trusted. Listen, this is totally off subject, but I do not. I'm on a straight phone. I'm on my iPhone, right? No speaker or anything. You're coming through swirly. So I hope when you do your
No, it's only coming through to you that way. It's going through okay to the rest of the world. It's a thing with this box. You know, someday we'll get a new phone system.
Okay.
Someday.
I was just hoping.
Yeah, those little bastards are more than $3,000 though, so it won't be someday soon.
At least we can communicate. You know, we have to be thankful for what we have.
Exactly. Todd, you have yourself a good night, my friend.
Thanks, man. Love you guys.
Hey, stay safe down there, you hear?
Okay.
Bye now. That's our buddy Todd in South Kakalaki. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me?
I hear you good.
Good.
Actually, I hear you well. You're a teacher.
I am. Honestly, if my kids can say here, I'm happy. So I wanted to talk to you about two things. One is what you were saying earlier about if George H.W. had won the 92 election.
Yeah.
And I was in graduate school at the time that when George Sr. was president. And he, that was when they started to gut women's health. And that was when they started to gut education in a pretty big way. I mean, I'm sure Reagan did it as well. But I know that between my first semester and my second, they stopped paying for my health fee. So there's tuition and fees. And I was on a federal fellowship. And it would not pay for $200 or whatever it was each semester simply because the health center provided advice, did not perform abortions, but provided advice, provided information.
What was that? The Hyde Amendment or something? Yeah.
Yes. So I had a complete federal fellowship except for my health fee. So that road would have started decades earlier than it really got going and would have affected countless women and countless unwanted babies. So that's just one tiny thing.
Well, howdy.
And then the other one is Trump. I don't know if you've been reading these articles about kids in schools saying that why are they being held to a different standard than Trump is?
Yes, I have.
So I actually had that in my classroom last week.
Really?
So I teach four classes. I teach five classes. And four of them are made entirely of newcomers, and one of them is English language learners who've been here 6 years or 4 to 6 years or more, but still haven't gotten the writing piece down. And I said to somebody, they're in middle school, somebody said something to someone else, and I said, hey, we don't talk that way in this room. And he turned around and said, yeah, we're not, or the next kid said, yeah, we're not Donald Trump.
Bingo.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, not in this room. And somebody asked me, they're like, well, what would you do if Donald Trump came and sat in your classroom? I said, the chances of him getting a referral within the first 10 minutes are pretty high.
Yeah. Hey, can you mute your chat room?
Can I what?
Mute your chat room.
What chat room? I'm in the chat room.
You're in the chat room, and I keep hearing, well, howdy.
Oh, can I mute the chat room? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Yes, it's muted.
I'm easily confused.
I thought you said meet, and I was just like, wait, what? Okay. Anyway, so I wanted to just add that 2 cents.
I'm glad you did. I mean, is there... Since you're teaching ESL students, is there much political discussion in the class?
So a lot of the kids, my morning class, so one of my morning classes, everybody is a refugee, and one of my afternoon classes, everybody's a refugee.
Well, that's kind of why I asked.
Right. And then there are assorted immigrants of various kinds. One of my classes that's all refugees, they didn't realize that they were legal. Like, they don't know enough about their status. Half of them were pretty well convinced that if, first of all, they don't know who Bernie is. They think it's only between Trump and Hillary. And they were pretty well convinced that if Trump...
And that's the for-profit media, right?
Yes. They were pretty well convinced that if Trump became president, they would all have to go back where they came from, which is a very dangerous proposition for a lot of them.
Deadly, even.
Yes. Yeah. Certainly for the kids from Afghanistan and Iraq, deadly. Depending on whether where you came from is the most previous country or the country where your parents were born. If they have to go all the way back to Democratic Republic of the Congo, yeah, completely deadly.
And I mean, this is a real object lesson in the power of the media, because to a certain extent, we live in a bubble. Everybody in this community is pretty well tied into reading stuff and pursuing information and trying to form a viable synthesis of facts as they can be gathered. But if all you're watching is the for-profit media, no, you don't even know Bernie exists.
Right. I mean, they didn't. His was the only speech that they didn't show on TV.
Which then, well, and you, I'm sure you know the story by now about the Bernie speech that was cut away from to feature the talking heads talking about anticipating what Trump was going to say or do or pull his pants down or whatever. You know that?
Right before he started talking against corporate something or other.
Right. And then what we started the program with, what John was observing out of this Rolling Stone article by Matt Taibbi, you know, the sandbagging of Bernie Sanders. This stuff matters. The news business really is a business, but it really is news.
Yeah.
And it's the business end that makes news that has so thoroughly compromised news in our world.
I get an interesting perspective because, in addition to teaching kids who are coming in with low literacy, which is the bulk of my job, my advisory is all sixth graders who've been in the country 2 years or less. That's how you qualify for my advisory. And so it's very interesting for me to hear. Last year it was eighth grade, and then I cycled back and picked up sixth. It's very interesting for me to hear what they think of our television, what they think of our news.
Well, did many of them have access to any kind of TV where they came from? I mean, and I realize that makes me sound like a simpleton, but...
Last year's eighth graders included a lot of kids from, very well-educated kids from Europe and from Korea. And so, yes. And Japan.
Japan?
Japan. This year with the sixth grade, it's Vietnam, Burundi, Tanzania, Uganda, going around the table, Afghanistan, Iraq, Israel, Mexico, and Venezuela. So, real mix.
And so you mentioned you've got one student who thinks Fox is the news?
This is a kid who's grown up in America.
Oh.
This is my Sunday stuff. This is a Hebrew school kid.
Ooh.
This is a Jewish Mexican-American girl who is about the most sheltered seventh grader I've ever met in my life. Had not heard of the Flint water crisis. And we were talking about possible mitzvah projects. And there's a kid from a town not far from us who collected a ton of money. First, he tried to collect water and send water up to Flint, only to find out that that wasn't really practical. And then he ended up doing something else with the water and collecting money and having the money go to a charity in Flint. And it was in the paper here. And so as we're talking about possibilities of what she's going to do for a service project, she had never heard of this. And I said, well, do you ever follow the news? She said that she watches it if it's on. I said, okay, well, what channel do you watch? And she said, you know, the regular news. I'm like, what's the regular news?
Oh, no.
ABC, CBS, Fox.
No, Fox.
All right.
Yeah. At which point that's like exit screaming.
I was like, all right, let's find some articles about this if you're interested in it, or other ways that kids make a difference, and let's look at the list that one of the other synagogues put out about possible mitzvah. Yeah, if you're getting your news from Fox News, you're going to be building a wall to keep yourself out.
Uh, 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 uh. And you know, I just kind of look at, you know, what kind of parenting is that? And I realize that marks me out as, you know, some sort of elitist.
There's the sheltered part, and then there's the, I don't know, I mean, it's, I don't know.
No, I mean, look, I'm not telling tales out of school or anything, but I've got a nice Jewish cardiologist.
Okay.
Who's a libertarian Republican who's disappointed that Ben Carson isn't in the race anymore.
Oh, my God.
And we've been having some Jim Dandy conversations, I can promise you.
Ben Carson?
Yeah, really.
Why?
It wasn't anything that I wanted to go into any depth on.
I get the people who say this is more practical than that, or like, I get some of the reasons people support some candidates, but how an educated person supports a Republican unless they really feel like it's better financially for them and they don't care about the rest of it.
Well, you know, I had my appointment, and I talked about the negligent discharge of firearms issue, and he almost came around on it. I said, come on, you're a health. You're a healer. It can't be okay for everybody to be carrying guns who have no training, and their guns are going to fall out of their pockets and hit the floor and, you know, oops, blam, thoughts and prayers. It can't be all right. And he goes, no, I guess you're right.
I have to say, Bob, that I was not as anti-gun until the last 5 years. And you're one of the people who convinced me that it's a much bigger problem than I thought.
It's a huge problem. But again, you know, I'm not one of the hardcores. I live in the country. I live in a place where there are perfectly rational reasons for owning firearms.
Right. Like, so I have a number of friends only 10 miles away who have guns because of coyotes. And I don't have a problem with that.
Right.
Like, it's, you've got livestock, you need to protect them. I don't have a problem with that at all. But my my experience with guns prior to, you know, reading the internet every day and listening to this program, my experience with guns was in Israel, where trained soldiers carry guns everywhere and you feel perfectly safe because they're trained and because really nothing goes wrong from that. I mean, it's, I think once in 40 years have they had a problem, you know, one man with a gun kind of thing.
I remember when Mr. Stress would talk about him carrying a pistol because he would get done with his gigs at 3 o'clock in the morning in bad neighborhoods. And I'm not going to tell that guy he doesn't need a firearm.
And then the other person who carried a gun is one of my best friends and a boyfriend for a time, who went from the Israeli army to the New York cops to a life in the world of computers, to being the liaison between the Jewish Community Center, the JCC campus, and both the city police and Homeland Security. And he carried a gun everywhere. But he's about the most trained person I know.
Right, but that's not the same thing as standing in line at the grocery store as a guy fumbles for his wallet and he's reaching past his Freedom Protector to do it, and you know that the last time he was at the range was, you know, during the Bush administration.
Right. That's the part where my view was skewed because of very limited exposure.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I've become more educated on the subject.
And I mean,
having spent time in Israel, I really didn't see the big deal. I was like, well, doesn't everybody have a gun? Oh, wait, only the people who are trained, only the people who are in uniform, only the people who could be court-martialed if they discharge their weapon. Right. Okay, completely.
Yeah, and there are even arguments to be made along those lines. I forget who it was. There was a conversation being had on one of my Facebook pages about firearms, and a couple of New Yorkers chimed in, and they said, you know, I'm still trying to figure out how all these assault weapons carrying Homeland Security NYPD types are going to shoot down another 9/11 plane.
Right.
And you know, some of it is just it's hard to conceive of a firearm as a whoobie, a security blanket. But from public perception, from that standpoint, sure.
Yeah, it's, I am hoping for Bernie, but between the media, the for-profit corporate media, and the Hillary liars spreading stuff on social media, it's got to be the people who go to see him who are voting.
Well, all we... you know, you just feel like you need to wear a hazmat. I have cleaned out my social media a lot.
Yes, I have dropped a lot of people over the last month or two.
There's one person who I'm still following, just to sort of see what it looks like. But for a while there, I mean, I had people on my feed that were like, just, oh my God, I can't believe it. You know, because they had started in with the commie stuff the minute that he announced his candidacy, as if his candidacy were somehow offensive.
Right.
As if he was, you know, standing there peeing in the pool or something.
So the person you capped is the person that you and I have in common?
Yes.
Yeah. Who, you know, is honestly level-headed about...
everything else.
Yeah, but he doesn't share anything else anymore.
No, it's all Hillary all the time.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why I'm still there. No, the people who I drop are the people who are outwardly racist, outwardly anti-immigrant, outwardly anti-children.
No, I'm sorry. I see you calling somebody a commie for supporting Bernie. You're gone.
Yeah,
I don't have a lot of, I mean, I've got some right wing friends, some Republican friends from my youth and whatnot, and I haven't blocked or gotten rid of them.
So I've got a couple of people on restricted where they can't see my stuff, but where it would be politically untenable working in the community that I work in to actually unfriend them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm glad you shared your information with us. I mean, I doubt if we would have considered the impact of the for-profit media on young immigrant minds had you not.
They were just sure that they were going to all get deported, and I was like, no. Everyone in this room is here legally. Let's start with that.
Yeah, because you just have to assuage fears at that point. The fact of the matter is, though, being here legally does not overcome bigotry and racism.
It does not, but it also does not get them sent back to the place that they were carried out of when they were 2 years old or spent 10 years in a refugee camp. This, yes, somebody's going to say something racist. Yes, my hijabi girls and my boys whose sisters or mothers wear hijab have heard all manner of things. That's not going to change. I don't see it changing. Fortunately, very little of it's happening at school, but in the neighborhood. I mean, the day that San Bernardino happened, was the day of the sixth grade dance. And I had four girls who were going to be walking themselves home half a mile along a major road to get home from the dance. And I texted parents and I said, you need to walk over and pick them up. Like, you're not letting them walk alone.
No, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but this story out of New York City. A couple of sanitation workers for the city were videoed screaming at a driver. They had blocked his vehicle and they were threatening, we're going to have you deported. Behave or you'll be deported. Where's Trump? Where's Trump when you need him?
Ugh.
Yeah. And the guy I'm looking at from the video screen cap, he's a white guy with a red beard.
Right. I mean, these are sixth grade girls. They happen to wear a hijab.
Yeah.
They are like every other sixth grader I have. It doesn't, but it makes them really visible. And I did not want them. I'm not sure I would have liked the idea of them walking themselves home to begin with. But I certainly did not want it that night.
Ugh. No, that would be intolerable.
You know, and the parents, I mean, I text parents on behalf of the school all the time. It never occurred to the parents that this was me talking and not the school talking. Honestly, I didn't care. Like, somebody wants to get me in trouble, they can get me in trouble.
Under those circumstances, I see how that would be difficult. I don't see how that would happen.
Honestly, at my previous school, everything got me in trouble, but at this school, it's hard to get in trouble for that stuff.
No.
I'd actually owe you a picture of them. Oh, man, I don't have it. I have to find a picture. I'm going to send you a picture of these little girls. I mean, they are not a threat to anyone.
Oh, of course. They're little girls.
It was their first dance. Once they found out that it was a party more than a dance and that they could,
at least they're not Baptists. They get to dance.
Right. The thing was they didn't have to dance. They could simply play and have snacks and things like that. But I also have to say the way that this community, especially the church that runs pace from the school, it's the kind of church where I could see you actually being happy. The way that this church...
Easy there.
The way they have adopted the refugee families and the refugee program as one of their three charities, they have a service day every time there's a fifth Sunday, and they invariably choose to do something for the refugee families. They had a Thanksgiving feast. They had a free shopping garage sale. They've had all manner of stuff.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Well, it would be nice if one of the synagogues would do it, but...
baby steps.
Just not going there.
Well, you have a good night. I'm glad you called in.
I'm sorry?
I said, have a good night. I'm glad you called in. We got to wrap things up here. We're coming up on the end of the program.
See you later.
All right, and bye now.
Bye.
And that's Betsy calling from Texas. I doubt those little kids know how lucky they are. Maybe when they get older, they will. Yeah, going back to the Alabama, you can't have a car bill. Carol pointed out, that's not even a war on the poors. A war implies both sides are armed. When these people are so poverty-stricken, they have nothing but a cloth coat and a straw mat. Well, that's just genocide on our own people. And that's what it's about. This character in Decatur, Alabama, is just trying to figure out a way to reinstitute slavery. What do you want to bet this guy's a big landowner? Or knows somebody who is? But that's not all. Just to round everything out, let's go north from Alabama to Tennessee. The University of Tennessee is, no kidding, it is a bastion of brains and thinking, of research, obviously education. Sits there right on the banks of the Tennessee River in Knoxville. And being as they are a university who is trying to fulfill the mission of, you know, a university, even in the Deep South, they're trying to make their campus as inclusive as possible. And so consequently, the University of Tennessee has an office for diversity and inclusion. And that means that the university tries to be welcoming to everybody, not just the straight white people. But gay people, straight people, people of color, people of different people. People come from all over the world to attend the University of Tennessee. Muslims, Jews, Christians, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, animists. Well, enter Micah Van Hus. He's a Republican in the State House there, a member of the Tennessee House of Representatives. And he's filed House Bill 2248, according to the Knoxville News Sentinel. Because he's sick and damn tired of the University of Tennessee having an Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And House Bill 2248 would forbid any state funds being used, quote, to promote the use of gender-neutral pronouns, sex week, or to promote or demote a religious holiday, because I guess they're waging the war on Christmas there in Knoxville, not to mention the war on Easter. So he then offered an amendment to his own bill to yank $100,000 a year from the University of Tennessee, a portion of which I'm sure goes to the Office for Diversity and Inclusion, and use them $100,000 a year to purchase In God We Trust stickers for law enforcement vehicles. Now, I don't know how many law enforcement vehicles there are in the state of Tennessee, but I'd almost bet that $100,000, you could paint every law enforcement vehicle in Tennessee, with In God We Trust. $100,000 a year. And here's the fun part. The House Education Subcommittee of the Tennessee Legislature approved both the amendment and the bill on a voice vote. Nobody even had to put their hands up or admit that they put their name to their vote. Now, apparently there's a slightly less radical, yeah, I know, Arthur, I know. Arthur says, no sex week? What's wrong with these people? Well, I mean, it's Tennessee, and just like everywhere else in the country and in the world, every day is sex day somewhere in Tennessee. You just don't want people having weeks for it and naming it and such like. One Republican said, reckon we could let UT fix these issues internally rather than us doing it, to which Representative Van Hus said, well, I don't know if it'd be advantageous to take a step back. The University of Tennessee, and specifically the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, in my mind and my research, yeah, because he's done research, you know what that is, he read him some Bible, has a history of repeat offenses. Personally, I don't trust the University of Tennessee to fix the problem on their own. then there are those of us who don't think it's a problem. Wonder if there'll be any protests there on the Knoxville campus. One hopes. One hopes. Yeah. Hey, time to get out of here. Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for meeting Dr. John's challenge and meeting the fundraising goal for this evening. Big super duper extra special thanks go to Marcia and to Joan and to Bob. Thank you, Bob, very, very kindly. We got to get out of here. Y'all have a great night. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Till then, later, y'all. Good night.